China takes its trade row with Australia to the World Trade Organization. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Beijing has issued the latest salvo in its escalating fight with Canberra today. It filed a lawsuit with the WTO challenging anti-steel dumping measures, including two-year-old tariffs on train wheels and wind turbines. The move comes a week after Australia challenged its biggest trading partner's wine export tariffs, which reach as high as 218%. The BBC's Phil Mercer has more from Sydney.
China is accusing Australia of anti-competitive behaviour against Chinese exports of railway wheels, stainless steel sinks and wind towers. The Australian Trade Minister is a man called Dan Tehan, and he says that Australia will be vigorously defending these duties that it has in place for several years now, and lots of speculation here in Australia that China's move is retaliation against Australia taking China to the World Trade Organization over barley and wine.
With more pressure perhaps from the US and Europe on China, do you think that could pressure China to the negotiating table with Australia?
Probably not. We get the sense here in Australia that perhaps China is trying to make an example of Australia. Australia is trying to stand up to what it considers to be economic coercion, as the Prime Minister Scott Morrison has indicated. Are there signs that China is willing to back down or to negotiate? We don't see signs of either of those two things. Now, tensions have been escalating between China and Australia. Last year, Canberra demanded an inquiry into the origins of the new coronavirus that was first detected in China in 2019. And ever since, we've seen relations deteriorate and this trade war between the two countries escalate.
And it's been a particularly painful situation for some businesses in Australia, hasn't it?
Many businesses have been suffering. The wine industry is one in particular. In November of last year, China announced additional import taxes on Australian wine exports of more than 200%. China was Australia's most valuable wine export market, but those duties imposed by the Chinese last year almost killed off that lucrative trade in an instant. It is worth noting, too, that at the moment, the key commodity that Australia relies on in terms of its exports seems to be off limits in this trade feud with China, and that is, of course, iron ore. Iron ore is Australia's most valuable export. Iron ore is helping to fuel China's industrialization. We don't see any signs of iron ore being dragged into this trade dispute between Beijing and Canberra, but relations are getting pretty bad, and no one really knows where it will end.
The BBC's Phil Mercer for us in Sydney. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Victoria.
Well, staying on the topic of China, under increasing pressure from Beijing, Hong Kong's pro-democracy newspaper Apple Daily has published its final edition. In the wee hours of this morning, thousands of people lined up outside its headquarters hoping to buy the last publication. Critics have said the paper's closure undermined free speech in the territory. The BBC's Michael Bristow has more on that.
The newspaper remained defiant until the end. The last front page showed an Apple Daily journalist waving to supporters who'd gathered outside its offices to witness the end. A million copies were printed. The media outlet has been forced to close because the authorities froze its bank accounts and arrested its most senior journalists. It's been accused of breaking the national security law imposed on Hong Kong by Beijing last year.
That's Michael Bristow reporting there. Some of the biggest Wall Street banks this week have said they'll require employees to either be fully vaccinated before they're allowed back into the office, or they'll be asked to register their vaccination status in order to shed face masks around their coworkers. Here in the UK, banking giant Citi employs 9,000 people. It says it wants staff back at least 3 days a week, but for now, without stringent vaccination requirements. Here's the company's country officer, James Bodrick.
We've got a wide range of employees from different backgrounds, but particularly of different ages. Although there's people like me who have been around for a very long time who were able to have their second jab, some of our younger people haven't had that opportunity yet. But for others, it's either not possible or not something that they personally want to do. So the approach we've taken is we're asking our people who are coming into the office to do testing twice a week.
Well, checking the numbers now, European shares are largely higher this morning. Germany's DAX and France's CAC 40 are leading the way up in the 1% range. Meanwhile, London's FTSE 100 is little changed ahead of the Bank of England's latest rate decision due out in about an hour. Over the last year, corporate America has made workplace diversity a priority. Today, it's Buckingham Palace's turn. In its latest annual report on public funding of the monarchy, the palace admitted it needs to, quote, do better in recruiting staff from ethnic minorities. The BBC's Johnny Diamond has more on that story.
8.5% of Buckingham Palace staff are drawn from ethnic minorities. That compares to 13% of the UK's population at the time of the 2011 census, and just under 40% of the population of London, where many staff are based. Could do better, is the palace's own verdict. We recognise we're not where we want to be, said a senior palace source, and we want to improve. Next year's target is 10%. But change may be hard to achieve. Whilst public funding has remained steady, the extra money the monarch made from things like paid visits to the palaces fell by half. A $14 million shortfall was covered by cutting back on some events, like garden parties, and by a recruitment freeze. Without new faces, it's difficult to change the profile of household staff. And the palace reckons that COVID restrictions will hit its supplementary income for some time to come. In London, I'm the BBC's Johnny Diamond for Marketplace.
Finally, Malaysian casino operator Genting Group is taking a more than $4 billion bet on Las Vegas. It's partnered with hotel giant Hilton to open the Strip's biggest property in more than a decade. Today, it'll cut the ribbon on a 3,500-room resort covering 88 acres. The city hopes it'll attract more tourism after visitor numbers slumped more than 50% last year. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.